War doesn't end when you leave the battlefield. The hardest fight comes after service. Identity, purpose, and tribe. Where do you stand when the uniform comes off? This is where we talk about it. No bullshit, no filters, just real stories from those who've been through it. This is the Great Guns Podcast with your host, James Scott.
Hi, everybody. It's James again from the Great Guns Podcast. And today I have another fantastic guest. And I think he's got an absolutely amazing story. And I think something that would terrify me to have done in the first place. But I'll let him tell you all about it. So I'd like a big warm welcome to Adam. How are you doing?
Hello, James. Thank you for having me. And hello to anyone who's listening. Yeah, my name is Adam Faulkner. That's the name. And do you want me to... I know what story you're talking about, James, but do you want me to just start telling it, or
it was basically, what the hell were you thinking? To kind of lay a bit of background, you had a well-paid job at the time, and in London, I believe it was in London, and you decided to go, well, sod that, I'm going to get on my bike and I'm going to cycle to Japan. What was that all about?
Well, I mean, it's obviously so much to say, James, but I think the just to answer your question about the, I guess, the mindset piece behind it. So just for some context, this was 7 years ago, almost to the day that we left. But obviously, it was me and one of my very, very good friends, and we went together. But the groundwork, as in the thought process, You don't just think about it and then just start doing it on one day. Obviously, you need some preparation physically. When I say physically, I don't mean like you need to train like you're going to the Olympics, but I mean you need a bike and you need stuff and you need to kind of untether yourself, I guess, from the old life that you have. So
yeah,
it probably took about 3 or 4 months, I would say, because I remember telling I used to work in TV as a producer in London. So yes, that is true. It was in London, James. And I think me and my friend, we were in a greasy spoon in East London, and we used to go there every Friday. And I asked him once, where's the one place that you haven't been that you'd love to go in the world? And he said Japan. And I was like, oh, that's mine too. And then maybe like the next week or the week after that, or was it, it may have been on the same day, he said, oh, we should cycle there. And I was just like, what are you talking about? And so we kind of let it go for a bit. And then he just came back one time and just went, I'm going to do it. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, I'm going to go. And I was like, okay, well, I can't not go. And then I couldn't watch him go and not go. And then it did genuinely move at some pace like that. And then he basically quit his job. And then I was like, well, I'm going to stay working. So he just quit his job for a while. And then I was like, he went back and lived at his parents' house for a bit in South Wales. And I was still working. And I was like, well, I'm going to have to go. So eventually I told, you know, my employer, and they were really happy for me, actually. It wasn't like they kind of look at you like what you're doing, but also like, oh, all right, I'm not surprised that you're doing that. My parents, who I love dearly, they were not so keen on it. I think mums are very keen on safety, which I've realized, yes, which is completely fair. I'm very protective of that. My mum was a safety concern person. My dad was more like a career suicide person. It's like, you know, bless him. He really like it. I think what I learned from that bit, and I've carried this forward just for everyone's listening, is that you just can't appease everyone. You know, it's just not possible. And if you decide if you decide to do something, and what people immediately do, and this is a really, this is before I'd even gone, great life lesson here, but they will put themselves in your shoes. Everyone does it all the time. They're not thinking they're doing it, but they are. They go, someone says I'm doing this or whatever. You immediately put yourself in another person's shoes, and it's a judgment of sorts, right? It's not to be critical of that person. It's just basically going, I wouldn't do that. And then if it goes too far, it goes, well, I wouldn't do that if I were you. Do you see what I'm saying? Like that's what ends up happening. Because they find the reasons why they wouldn't do it. And then they start finding the reasons why you shouldn't do it. And it just becomes this thing where it's like, okay, well, it's my life. And so I do understand their concerns and my parents, but I had to just say, thank you for that. Thank you for your concern. I've taken them on board and I'm going to do it anyway, but not in a you know, not in a, like, I was 31, so I'm not a child, you know, I'm an adult. Anyway, so that moved along at breakneck speed. Everything was fine. They weren't like too, they weren't too obstructive, but they didn't really want me to do it, let's be honest. And yeah, then in March 2018, we just set off. We had all the stuff, loads of stuff, you know, a bike with six bags on, loads of stuff, and off we went from East London in the flat that I used to live in. And then I'm sure we will talk about parts of the journey as well, but it was about 16 months later, you know, I'm in Tokyo. We're in Tokyo in Shibuya Crossing, which is, if anyone doesn't know, it's that really busy crossing in Tokyo where, like, basically there's like seven or eight roads or whatever coming onto this crossing. And then when the lights go, everyone just crosses from all these different angles. So it felt like, well, that's the end point. So I'm sorry to ruin the end, but we did get there. But, you know, there's obviously lots of things that happened along the way. So, you know, if you'd like me to talk about, if you have any questions on that, I'm more than happy to answer them.
Well, yeah, it was the kind of questions that come up is, well, you started that discussion where you're talking about your parents and people around you, where they kind of put themselves in your shoes, but not for your advantage, if you like. It's, they're putting themselves in your shoes, but looking at it through their minds and not yours. And so it's that not understanding actually who you really are. They're just allowing their own fear to kind of put the brakes on you, maybe, or not be as supportive as they could be. How did you kind of work your way through that? Were you just a case of, okay, well, thanks? Or did it play on your mind? And if so, how did you deal with it?
I think it did play on my mind, definitely, because I don't want to upset them. But I think what tipped over the balance for me was just like, well, I really want to do it. So I was kind of reverse going backwards from there. I was just like, I'm going to do it. I want to be as civil, you know, I want to be civil here. I don't want to be going in and going, you can't tell me what to do. It's because then the conversation becomes about the way you've spoken to them. And it becomes like an argument about that. So that's why I tried to be not dismissive of their concerns. I did listen. And to be honest, like, it's not like I didn't think about them. It wasn't like, my mum's like, okay, where have you thought about, you know, it's dangerous going here and going there. And if anything, it was, even though I was going to do it, I was processing those thoughts myself anyway, because it was quite, I'd never done anything like that before. So it was a bit, very much going into the unknown. So I think they're entitled to their concerns. They're entitled to their opinions. I wouldn't expect people to just not ask any. I think it would be even stranger if they didn't ask any questions or didn't have any, you know, opinions on the matter. It was just like, oh, okay. Like, just be like, okay, yeah, fine. But so I think,
feel like they don't care.
Yeah, I feel like they don't care. So I knew they cared, but I think that was, there's several things going on there, which is that, you know, you don't want to upset them, but then I think that what will override it is that their pride in, well, their son, myself, doing something quite monumentous, right, for me. And then, you know, it's funny how they, when I'd done it, they were, or when I, while I was away and they got used to it, they were like telling people what I was doing, and they're like, oh yeah, he's in Thailand at the moment, you know, it's just his cycle. Like, so suddenly the story had become, well, my son's doing this now. And isn't that great?
And the pride.
You know, and then you get back and they're like, yeah, he's just got back, you know. And it's like, because I think parents, especially, well, I say especially mothers, my mother, you know, I wouldn't say she's a gossiper, but she, you know, it's like, my Adam's doing well. He's just got back from here. You know, it becomes like something that she can talk to people she meets or knows or friends, whatever. So it becomes something that, you know, but I do sometimes, and I actually, I'm going to see her this week, and maybe I'll say it, because every now and again, I say this to her. You know, she wasn't so keen on it, but then obviously when the non-keenness got to like a pride thing, then she was never going to look back then. But I do understand her concerns, as in my mother's, because she just cares about safety. And this might be an interesting segue into a story from the trip, but What I learned, I'm just going to sum up. What I learned was, you know, you should listen to people's concerns. They will put themselves in your shoes. They will judge you. Okay, you can't stop that in life. And it's what you do with that information moving forward. And I have that, you know, I have that with me now. Like, I've just realized, you just realize you can't appease everyone, but I'm not purposely going out there to, you know, try and upset people with that. But I think you do have to live your life the way you want to live it. You're never going to get 100% across the board approval. So it's what you do with the approval and non-approval. I actually think getting some non-approval is a good thing because it will make you think about it in a different way. Sometimes you can get too many people going, yeah, great, well, yeah, sure, whatever. But let's be honest, it's what you do with that. But my mum's safety concerns, I actually think were founded a couple of things that happened. One thing didn't actually happen to us, but there's a group of cyclists, and this happened in Tajikistan, who got murdered by ISIS. And when I say ISIS, I mean it was a group of Tajik men who had recently pledged allegiance to ISIS, and they basically ran over several cyclists, European cyclists, who were basically just doing the same thing as us. So that was really, I didn't know them, and it happened a few weeks before we actually got to the, but we went the same way. Like, I'm not saying it could have been, but I don't want to be dramatic about it because I wasn't there. But so these men ran over some cyclists. There's probably a group of maybe seven of them, and they killed like five of them, and they just ran them over. And then he came back and tried to run them over, and I think two survived. But it was really shocking. It's shocking. And they were from like France, and I think they're from France and the Netherlands and maybe some other country, European countries. But it was really shocking because it felt like our community, you know, because they were doing just what we were doing. And it was just really, really sad thing to happen. Obviously, my mum was very worried about that, understandably. And it wasn't like, oh, let's go through the same place just to prove a point. It was just that was the way we were going. And I think that the men who did that, they all just got shot dead by the army. So it was really kind of dramatic. But that was such an outlier, you know. It was not like, to be fair, it wasn't like we were cycling through, I don't know, and we were very close to Afghanistan, not to go in, but really close to it, because Tajikistan is it borders Afghanistan. So we were just cycling on the border for like days at one point. Not that we were going to go in. It's not a wise decision. I mean, you can't go in, but if you did, you know, I actually got told the story where some people had tried to prove a point, not cyclists, but a few years earlier, they'd just kind of gone over, literally just gone into Afghanistan and be like, yeah, it'll be fine. They got kidnapped and I think they got killed. So the point is, just to bring it back to my mother's safety concerns, I can see it. But yeah, that was just really bad luck. But Tajikistan, I'm not bad, Matt. It doesn't feel like an unsafe country, and it's not on a list where you're like, you can't go there. So that was just really bad luck.
Yeah,
really.
It's just unfortunate at the time that it happened. Those guys were in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, I do remember because I was in Kazakhstan at the time.
We heard the news.
Yeah, we're already out there, and it was just like, well, that's the way we're going. And I did. I mean, it's weird. I do remember thinking, God, that's really bad. And when we were in Tajikistan, I do remember looking over my shoulder a little bit, but not because I really felt like if something was going to happen. I think you have to remember that you're in the road anyway. Do you know what I mean?
I get that. It's the same, like living, like I lived in South Africa for many years, hence the accent. But you kind of, things happen. And some horrible things happen, and you might be in a similar situation, but you kind of got to go, you know, am I doing this or not? Because I can't live in fear my whole life. So you take that calculated risk sometimes and go, well, okay, we're going to do it.
Go on.
No, Karen.
I was going to say, I've never been to South Africa. I've never been to Africa. I'm considering myself to be well-traveled, not in a competitive way. I just really enjoy it. And I've never been to South Africa, but I do know that there's probably parts of South Africa or, you know, regions or parts of a city or whatever, you're not going to go to, or it's not wise to go to.
Well, yeah, exactly. There's places that it's, well, I mean, anywhere in the world, any country's got places that it's not wise to go. But yeah, I remember I was younger, I was probably 20, and I used to drive work colleagues into some of the townships at night. And as a white young lad, it was probably the stupidest thing to have done. But I felt, you know, it's like they've got to get home and I can help them. So I used to send them home. But a lot of people would say, you'd say it's a stupid thing to have done. So you can't live in fear all the time. You got to live life and as much as you can.
And I also think, just on the safety thing, and this is what I realized, and this is that people are afraid of what they don't know, you know, a lot, and what they don't understand. And I'm not saying that, like, everywhere is safe or everywhere is unsafe. I'm just saying, like, it's easy to, I think my mum would kind of be looking at stuff on the Foreign Office website. I'm not saying it's not valid information, but I was in, for example, Turkey, which I loved, a great country. Really amazing and hospitable people. Like, I haven't got a bad word to say about what I experienced there, but on the Foreign Office website, it was like, you know, I can't remember what it said, but my mum was sending it to me and I was like, I'm here and this is nothing, you know. And I don't want to be one of those people, that guy who's like, no, everywhere's safe, don't worry about it. I don't think that. But I, for example, and this is relevant because I talked about this the other day, I think recently there was a couple in, they just basically were in Iran and they basically just got arrested by police or the government or whoever. I don't know if they're thrown in prison. I don't know if they're still there. But a lot of people I met were like, Iran is, the people in Iran are so nice. And I was like, I don't think I'm a UK citizen. It's not good for me to go there. But yeah. I spoke to like maybe a French guy and he was like, the people are so nice, but he's French and they're all right with the French, you know. Or it was, I think it was like, and then I met an Irish person. They were like, everyone's so nice in Iran. They're so hospitable. Like all the, you know, just general local normal people, let's say. And it just makes you go like, cause that's what I felt like everywhere I went. Like you meet people and they're just really nice. Like they're hospitable. And I'm not saying there's not people out there to get you, but I think people sometimes forget. I mean, I live in London. But I don't feel unsafe. But I'm not saying it is safe or it's unsafe. I'm just saying I don't feel unsafe. And yet, you know, you could argue.
Yeah, I appreciate what you said. There's both sides to that, because things can happen anywhere, and there are some places that are safer than others, and in every country.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you when you were traveling, because now you've obviously mentioned, you know, a couple of countries there. Was there ever a time where you actually did sit there and think, you know, actually, I can't do this anymore? Like, whether that be from did you ever feel uneasy or unsafe, or, you know, did you get to a stage sometimes? Because it's a long, what was it, 8,000 and something miles, I think it is.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, that's the as the crow flies, but I think we ended up doing about 17,000 miles, because it was like just, you know, squiggly line. Sometimes we did some stuff where we would, this is going to maybe open up a different part of the conversation, but me and my friend were making music with people, so we played a lot of shows, we made music with people, like, okay. So we did a lot of stuff like that, and sometimes we'd go well out of our way to do something. It wasn't always like the most direct route, but in terms of the feeling a bit like, oh, I've had enough of this, or like, look, some days were like hard, like really hard going physically, really hard going mentally. You know, there's incident where my friend, this is so random, like a dog like ran into his front wheel, but like through the front wheel. So it just kind of, he fell over the handlebars. And the dog went up in the air. It was just like this. I remember seeing it. And then he basically landed almost on his head on the road. And he wasn't wearing a helmet. And then he stood up and it was just like, he had a shaved head and a red beard, big red beard. And it was just like blood just like, you know, pouring down his face into his beard. And you could see he had like it was swollen and there was a big gash. And I was just like, that was... I remember thinking that day, I was just, because we're in India and there was no one there. It was really weird, because I don't know if you've been to India, but there are people like everywhere. Like, I'm going to say everywhere. I mean, like, it feels like there's 2 billion people there. Like, it's really hard to, it sounds like I'm suggesting there's people like you can't move. But what I'm saying is there's just people everywhere. Like, it's not like, oh, this is a tranquil spot where there's no one around. It's just, there's people everywhere. And this seemed to be like the one place in India that we'd been to where there was literally no one there. And I was just like, what am I, what do I do? And I just switched into this like I think when these moments, you know, when you have to do something, like to say, well, to do to make things right or save someone, whatever it is, he was not capable of doing anything. So it was like I had to step up, and a car came past. Hardly any cars came, but a car came past. And I pushed him into this car, and they didn't speak English, but I told them to write down, like, you know, they got the idea, right? And it felt like something out of Harry Potter, because it felt like a small car, but it felt like there was about 15 people in the car. It was one of those kind of scenes, and I was like, okay. But then I had my bike, obviously me, my fully loaded bike, his fully loaded bike, and I was just like, okay, right, what should I do next? And then the tuk-tuk came, and I basically somehow got myself and two fully massive bikes into this tuk-tuk, and then we basically drove to this village, which is what they'd written down, so I knew where it was. But I remember sitting in that tuk-tuk thinking, you know, when you start your mind, when something bad happens, you start catastrophizing, and you start thinking about, like, I started thinking, what am I gonna tell his mom, you know? And I felt really, you know, stressed in that moment, and then I was just like, I need to stop thinking about that, because it's just not helpful. So I remember just sitting there like that, and then I just went, right, stop doing that. And then we got to this village, and I got to the village with this man in the tuk-tuk, and he stayed in the tuk-tuk with the bikes. I run into, like, this building. It was, I wouldn't call it a hospital, but it had like a red cross on it. So I was like, okay, it must be in there. And I was shouting my friend's name, Tim. So I'm shouting, Tim. And he's like, oh, I'm in here. So I run down the corridor, and I see, like, there's probably about 50 people in this corridor from the village. People in the room from the village, and there's a guy, a doctor, I would say, or as close to, and he's like stitching my friend's head with, like, these, like, stitches that look like, I'm not saying they were shoelaces, but what I'm saying is they were, like, they're so thick, you know what I mean? Like, you think of stitches as, like, oh, that's done well with the stitching there. It's literally just like thick stitches. And I'll never forget this moment. So he's saying to me, my friend Tim, he's like, you know, I need some painkillers and so, or, you know, some pain or whatever, pain relief. So I said to the doctor, I said, you know, he needs some pain relief. And he kind of turns around and he comes back with this massive needle. It was so big. And he genuinely just said the word buttocks. And I started laughing because I thought it was hilarious. But Tim was like, I don't want that in my ass, my butt. And I was just like, okay, right, what's going on here? Then suddenly, like, a local Indian journalist appears, and he's in the room, and he's like, what's going on? You know, what's happened? And I was just like, look, mate, I used to be a journalist. The irony. And I was like, look, you know, just go away. But he then was like, the doctor was like, you need to go to a bigger hospital. And then basically he couldn't cycle because he was all messed up and stuff. And it was just like, okay, how do you get to this hospital? Where is it? We were going that way anyway, but we were planning on cycling there. Then somehow we've got the man in the tuk-tuk who brought me, got Tim in the tuk-tuk, me in the tuk-tuk, the two bikes. And it was just like, what I'm trying to say is this kept going on the whole day. And then, but then we had to get out of India because our visa was going to run out. So it was just a bit like,
wow,
you know, you just like, it was, and then eventually we ended up going through this region, which was like heavily militarized. We were going to go that way anyway, but like there's militarized because there's lots of terrorists. It was very like, what I'm saying is those few days, ended up getting across the border into Myanmar, which ironically, I don't think you can go to now, but it was just like, you know, you just like, everything was just heightened for days. And Tim was pretty useless because he was injured. And I was really worried about him, not because of the bleeding, but because he'd fallen on his head on the road. And I was watching him like a hawk for weeks, because I was just like, because another friend who I'd met had said to me that his friend had died because he fell off a motorbike and hit his head on the road. And he was okay at first, and then a few weeks later, he actually died. So I was just going, this is just like, you know, so that there's a few extremely intense days. And then there was like weeks where I was just like, okay, what's going on here? So I think, and I, this is where I have got this phrase from. I mean, this is going to sound really obvious. I always say to people now, not necessarily that story, but I'll say basically everything's all right until it's not all right. And I think that when you're away and you're in a foreign land or a foreign place, and it's quite, you don't understand it because you're not from there, it seems amazing. You know what I mean? Because you're like, oh wow, like culture and like look at all these differences and you know, amazing things that I've never seen and, you know, heard and tasted before. When it goes wrong, you feel so vulnerable. And so, like, I'm not saying you just want to go home, of course you do, but the point is it wasn't possible. So you kind of like, okay, deal with it. And I think that it shows, it teaches you, you know, not that you purposefully want that kind of thing to happen, but it really teaches a resilience. So like, I think when people do travel, and you know, some people don't, they go on holiday and they'll just stay away from any sort of interaction with that land, which I don't like. I'd rather be with the people who are there, but it opens up this, okay, well, I don't understand what's going on here. And you feel a bit, you know, so if something goes wrong, you know, or the shit hits the fan, let's say, like it really does, it shows you what you're made of. And I do say that is something I say a lot these days based on that experience, which is it's all right until it's not all right. And then you basically, you know, but you can't live your life, a bit like how we said 5-10 minutes ago, you can't live your life anticipating the next moment where that's going to happen. You just basically have to live your life, enjoy it, you know, to the full. And when something does happen, because it is going to happen, you have to deal with it the best you can.
Yeah, it's having that kind of peace of mind where you can actually just go, like, I think you said earlier, where it's like, right, stop, that's not helping, thinking about that and thinking about all the things that can go wrong. It's boom, what can I do, what can I change? And I think that story that you were saying now clearly illustrated that. That's obviously how you kind of dealt with that. So what, going through that sort of thing, what would your advice be then to, you know, looking at it from a perspective of a veteran coming out of service, they've had all the structure and often they kind of feel like they've come out and it's the Squid Games and it's like, there's no structure. Yeah, you're all for yourself now. And that can become kind of overwhelming and can often have serious consequences. What would your advice be to someone that is possibly heading or feel like they're heading in that direction or possibly stuck in the thick of it?
I think, you know, just to be clear, I don't have any personal experience with that world in the service.
Yeah, services. No, 100%.
But I would say that to those people who've clearly been through some very difficult situations and they've learned how to deal with them, you know, because you wouldn't be there if you couldn't deal with them. It's maybe kind of enlisting or tapping into those, how you dealt with that, but maybe in the real world. And I know it's different, and I think that's the point, isn't it, that when you're in a different world, even though it does change, because for example, when I got back, I felt quite lost. And I'm not likening that trip to being in the services, I'm just saying I was away for a long time, and that's where I'm saying the comparison is. And you're kind of in this, like, everything feels a bit crazy and a bit mad, and you're not really in part of society. So I do feel that I can understand that. I'm not saying it's the same activity or same way of life, but being away and probably going through some very difficult moments, when you return, I found it quite difficult that like people would be getting upset about like very small things to me, like someone would burn their toast and I'd just be going, well, it doesn't matter, does it? Like, but I think that would be where I can understand, because it's a bit like, I appreciate that maybe there's been some trauma potentially for people and they're trying to deal with it. But I think it's the coming back part that's probably really hard for people, because it was for me, and I didn't serve in that way, but it did feel like some sort of expedition
the comparison
adventure.
Is exactly that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have to. I mean, some guys in service never actually see any action. They never see any frontline duties or anything like that. So they might not have it, but it's that experience where they've been around the known for so long, and then suddenly they're in the unknown, which is exactly kind of, you knew what you were doing. Every day you got on your bike and you were cycling and you were getting from point A to point B, and you didn't have to worry about, I don't know, TV licenses or road tax any of that. Yeah. And then suddenly you're back in the thick of it going, you know, because I think you said, what, 15 months you're away?
Yeah, about that's 15, it? 16 months, yeah.
Yeah, it's a long time. So I think your comparison is still very, very valid.
I think, you know, I think it does create the world that you knew feels different. And I think but I think with time, I think for me, and I know we're not here to talk about my business that much, but I actually was very lost when I got back. And because it just, I wasn't really sure what I was supposed to be doing. As in, like, I just left this thing behind, right, which was like the best thing ever. And me and my friend had written all this music, and we'd been asked to play loads of music festivals, and I was really excited about that, and I just wanted to go all in on the music thing. But then sadly his dad passed away, and it really messed him up, because we just got back and our minds weren't quite, you know, back in the real world. And then he's dealing with the grief from his dad passing away, which is really obviously extremely sad. But then I lost my dream because he had to stop doing that dream. And I was probably the lowest I've ever been in my life, actually. Because I was just like, I'd lost my sense of purpose. My dream was gone. I didn't have any money. I don't mean I didn't have any money. Like, in that, I wouldn't have been okay, because I have a family who could have helped, you know, looked after me. But yeah. I'm very blessed. But
it's the fundamental side of it. What was going on in your mind?
Yeah. I was just at home at my parents' house, and I was trying to let go of this dream. And then my friend who was in a band with, he's like, oh, you come and stay with me for a bit, because he lived in Manchester. My mum and dad are near Liverpool, so it's not far. And yeah. I just went there, and I just thought, okay, well, maybe I'll just need a break from this and I'll figure something out. And it kind of got lower before I got higher, but I was just not in a good place, because I was just like, what's the point? You know, I still had this, you're moaning over the burnt toast, you're getting annoyed about this. Like, I was struggling, but I also didn't have a wider purpose, which was what am I doing now? And the reason it's relevant, the business thing, is because at some point I just went, you know what? I'm just gonna start my own business. And my nan had passed away, and she left me some money. So I was like, I'm just going to spend that. I'm just going to buy a laptop and a camera, because I've always worked in media. So, like, I know how to storytell. I've always been a journalist, made documentaries. So I was like, I'm just going to do that myself. And then, so I bought that, and I felt really pumped. I was like, oh, great, I've got a purpose, you know, and I felt really good about it. And then COVID happened about two weeks after that. And I was just like, okay, I'm back in this, like, sink or swim. Like, how do I, you know what I mean? It was really, but I realized, and this is, it's really good talking about it, actually, because I haven't really spoke about all these linked things for a while, but yeah. I was back in this, I felt like I was in a way back on the road with Tim, and his head's messed up, and I have to sort it out. And that's how I felt every day at the beginning of COVID, because I was just like, well, I also felt like I didn't have anything to lose, but it was also just like, you know, everyone was worried about their existence at that point. So trying to convince people to be like, let's do some work together. And also, let's be honest, I couldn't go out.
Yeah.
You know,
I
couldn't leave the confines of flat and the small garden and the little, you know, where we were. But that time was extremely pivotal for me in my life, because if I hadn't have been there, if I hadn't have been there, I wouldn't have done this. And it might have not looked the way it looks today, but I wouldn't have started the business that I have now, which is still 5 years. You know, I've moved on from that one dream, created a new purpose, and now that's going really well. I met my partner, my girlfriend, not my business partner, my girlfriend, who literally lived next door to where I was in that flat, and we're together. Yeah. And we live together. So I think what I'm trying to say is that I love the adventure of life, right? And I think that I said this actually on LinkedIn the other day. I was like, I really do think like this. I think of myself as an old man on my deathbed. And I think about it, not like every day, but I think about it when I hesitate to take action on something. For example, you know, like, I don't want to be that man who, you know, looked back and like, well, I should have done more, you know. And it's not like I have I don't have a list. It's not like I have to do all these things, but I use it as my, I do not hesitate to action things that I think are worth doing. You know, I'm not going to be like, yeah, I want to get into tango or salsa dancing. I don't really want to do that. I'm not that bothered about that. No. But recently I started doing stand-up comedy, just because why not? Like, and I really enjoy it. Do I want to be a stand-up comedian? No, but I enjoy doing it. You know, like, will do things. I will do marathons because I'm just like, well, I'll just do it. I'll just see how it goes and enjoy it. Do I want to be a marathon runner? Not really, but I enjoy it. So that's how I take a lot of things in my life. And I'm 38 years old and I see them all as adventures. And I'm like, I think the reason I use adventure is because it makes me think of the bike trip. when people say journey, I feel like people can be carried along on a journey and not really, not in control of it. Whereas with an adventure, you're like, no, I'm exploring. I'm in control of the adventure. It sounds more exciting. I think, as I said, with journey, I think the word's overused. And I think some people just, it seems a bit more like they're a passenger rather than they're actually, you know, it's like, well, we get carried along by the tide. Whereas I'm like, let's go for it. You know, like, what's over there? And so I do incorporate that into as many elements of my life as possible. If anything, I really don't like going to bed knowing that I didn't try to do something, or I'm not saying anything, but anyway, I think you're going to say something.
Okay, so I'm a few years older than you, but we're very similar kind of thought there. I will do things because, I want to know how they do it. You know, when you talk about commercial diving, close protection course, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Look, I was previously in the reserves, so I had a bit of military experience, but I've always enjoyed that side of it. But there's courses and things I'll go, I wonder how, if I could do that. And I'll go do it because it's an adventure and you're learning and but I've never got round to really doing where I step off like you did and go, actually, I want to go on an adventure like that where I'm on the road, or whether I go, I don't know, kayaking down a river, or you know, go trekking in the Himalayas, that sort of thing. I've always not quite got to that, doing those big adventures. But whereas you do, you've actually gone out and done something like that, which is absolutely amazing. But I get where you're coming from when you say that, you know, you don't have your bucket list, but you just, you know, I wouldn't mind giving that a go. And you go off and you try it.
Thank you. I appreciate that a lot. I think I've got a really good relationship with risk. And I didn't used to be really, I wouldn't say I was risk averse, but I wouldn't take as many risks. Now, I wouldn't say they're huge risks. I'd say they're quite calculated, but it's because I know that if I do it, it's stuff where it's like, I know if I'll do it, I'll feel great about it. And if I don't, it's not about being the best at it. You know, that's not why I do it. It's more just like, do you know what? I just want to live. And it sounds really, in a way, quite woolly, but I just want to live a really fulfilled life, you know? And I find that, I think everyone does. I don't think it's like, what do you mean? No one wants to do that. I think
people put too much on risk where they go, they won't even try because they think that's too risky.
Well, the point is, what is it that they're, why is it that they're not doing it? And actually I realized that there's a, you know, circling all the way back to what my parents were saying about, they wouldn't do it. There's this kind of fear of judgment. There's a fear of looking foolish or silly. You know, sometimes there might be a fear of something going wrong, you know, or genuinely, or like their safety or something, which is a legitimate fear. But I think that if I could offer people some advice, is like, you will grow and benefit much more as a person if you take even these micro adventures. You know, it doesn't have to be like doing what I did there, like taking, that's a long time. Like, people don't have, you know, the time.
Most people don't have that, yeah.
But, and that's fine. I'm not saying they do. One thing I would say is, though, I met people on that trip who'd taken their kids, right? And they were young kids, and I've seen them, because I've seen them do it. And I've met them up a mountain, and I was like, wow, you've taken your two kids with you. And what I'm trying to say is, if it's what people, if a person really wants to do something, they will do it. You know, it doesn't mean you have to do it. But the point is, like, find your micro adventures. What I think it's a great place to start, because you really build this kind of like, wow, okay. So I could have not done that, but I did do it. And now I feel like this. And that's how I feel about, you know, all these micro adventures. Because I do it every day. I might not go on a trip like that again, but I will go out and I will talk to that person that other people won't talk to, because I want to, and I find it enjoyable. And I, you know, and it might lead to something. I'm not going in with an agenda. I'm interested. And I think if you have a curious mind or a curious disposition, you will go on micro adventures. And I would say to anyone, they don't have to be what other people would do. But if you're not pushing yourself, you know, in life, you know, because growth is uncomfortable. It really is. And if you're not pushing yourself to try things out, not because you need to be number one, but just because you're interested, start with a curious mind and you know, feel like you can experiment with things. I don't think people do that enough. Having said that, there's nothing wrong with having a comfort zone. I know where my comfort zone is, and I sometimes I want to be in that comfort zone. that's fine. But then each day I'll be like, okay, that's going to push me. So I'll go and do it. And I'm not saying that I'm going to do like a different activity every day for the rest of my life. Like, okay, right, well, now I'm doing this, now I'm doing that. But when I see the opportunity and I'm like, do you know what? I'm interested in that. I'll give it a go. And that's all it needs to be. And, you know, people will, I don't know, it just makes your life so much more interesting, you know, rather than going, and people will go, well, it's all right for you. And I'll go, that's an excuse. You're making excuses.
I hear that a lot. Yeah. So I was going to say, I do a lot of teaching and instructing. I work with like youngsters from kind of 12 to 18. And I also deal with some adult training as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, is exactly that, is, you know, saying to them, your comfort zone, just give it a try. Just take that little step outside your comfort zone, because that's where you'll grow. And then you see them do it. And then you see that, oh, wow, oh, I can do it. And it builds on itself. They then become more and more confident, and you see how they grow. But I liked your little term there, that micro adventures. I think that is such a great phrase.
I've never said that before. So I've literally just said it. No, James, that's the first time I've ever said it. But I think it's absolutely brilliant.
I think that is something I'm definitely going to put out there. Is that micro adventure? It's that little. Just do something just slightly different. Something small, because one builds on another, builds on another, and it's that snowball effect, and life can then change. I really like that. That's absolutely brilliant.
I think it's just. It's, thank you. I appreciate that. I've never said it before, so I'm coining it as well. Because I did say
put your name at the bottom of it.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. That's, look out for the book. Hey, that's my book eventually, Micro Adventures. But I think people can do that every day, and I do believe that. It's, like it doesn't, it doesn't have to be like, do you know what I think a really good one is? It's the talking to other people. Like that can be a micro adventure. And when I say talking to other people, I mean like strangers, or, you know, maybe talking to someone that, you know, but maybe you said something that you've been holding back, or just, you know, it's just that little thing that you can do where you're like, do you know what? I've been putting that off, or just, it just, I don't know, you just feel so alive.
Yeah.
When you go on.
Exactly. I 100% agree. Wholeheartedly.
You know, it's not about like, it doesn't have to be like, oh, I'm terrified of spiders. Okay. I need to hold a tarantula. That doesn't work. Anyway, you have to do that in micro. I mean, I've heard anyway with, I'm not an expert in this, but it would be like with a spider, it would be like, draw a picture of a spider. You know, it's in steps. You know, it's not like, oh, I'll just hold this really massive spider. Like, so I think, that's why the micro adventure things, I think it works, because it's like, I don't know about you. I mean, I'm sure you do, because I'm a human being. I'm sure you feel like this, James. You know, when you do something and you're like, Joe, okay, that I felt a bit anxious about that, or a bit, you know, a bit scared of that. And then you do it and you're like, why do I feel so great? And it's like,
yeah. And it's quite often you sit and you think, I'm an idiot. Why was I worried about that? But we internalize stress and we internalize fear, and we allow it to grow in our heads if we let it loose. Whereas if you just kind of go, well, okay, let's give it a go.
I also think I'm human, and I'm not averse to, you know, I'm not immune, sorry, to that building up. I think it's how much you let it build up. That's the difference. Like, so I don't let it build up too much, because I know that if I let it build up too much, I end up getting annoyed with myself. And then it, do you know what I mean? Internalizes in a different way, because you're like, why am I not doing that? That's so annoying. Like, why can't I just do it? Whereas if I just pull the, you know, put a pin in it and it just kind of goes, I'm like, I can reset, if that makes sense. But I'm still immune to it. I'm not immune to it. I still do get a bit like, I don't think anyone's truly fearless. It's not.
No, 100%. I mean, I'm kind of illustrating the point there. I'm nervous of heights.
Right, me too, yeah.
I know I'm fine. Going up the rock, I'm a little bit more apprehensive. Whereas abseiling, I will push off and, you know, like you see the experts doing it.
Yeah,
you
know, just I'll do go for it.
Like that, no qualms. But I think, kind of reminded me, just going back a bit, it reminded me, I was probably 17, 18 maybe, and I was with Sea Rescue in South Africa. And we had to do a ship jump where you're on the side of the ship and you got to jump into the water and to learn to hit the water correctly and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And going up, I was proper bricking it.
Yeah.
And it's only when I got to the edge that I actually just went, I literally said, I don't know why, balls to the wall, and literally jumped. Whereas if I'd allowed myself to stand there any longer, I would have probably backed down, because I would have over let that fear boil and boil and boil. And then since then, I've always just got to a stage where with something like that, that kind of fear where it's physical, you know, you're going to do something that's a little bit risky, if you like, I actually say that to myself in my head. I go, yeah, balls to the wall, get in, you know, I'll go and do it.
You need systems. So,
you know, not allowing it to build up.
You need systems in your own mind to do these things. Like you've just described to me there, like, I get what you're saying 100%. I'm scared of heights. If I sit on the edge or stand by the edge and I'm just thinking about it, it's not going to be any good for me. So like I climb, not like I'm not a climber, but I like climbing mountains and I like, you know, pushing it. And I'm not, I don't feel like completely in danger, but it's not safe. But it's not like, oh, this is so safe. But the thing I was wanted to say was that you've created a system there, which is, okay, you know, just as an analogy, you go to the edge and you say balls to the wall. And that's the thing that just basically makes you feel like, right, okay, well, I'm going to go. That's what I say. That, you know, and that's what I'm saying. You create the system for your adventure, your micro adventure. I probably have similar things. I've just not really got, I'm not really verbalizing them like that. But it is that point where you just go, okay, I go to this, the edge, I go to the edge, and then I say this, and then I do it 100% of the time. Whereas, and you need something like that, like, so you can just go through like a little checklist or something. You go, when I do this, I say that. And your phrase is clearly balls to the wall.
Don't know why.
And it worked. No, but it works for you because if you've done it more than once, you know that you're going to do it. I think that's the point.
Yeah, I know exactly. Yeah.
So is that what you say? Do you say that kind of, is that what you say every time you kind of feel like you're in that kind of position?
Yeah, most of the time, if it's one of those proper stressful where I'm like, you're sitting there thinking, I'm not so sure I should be doing this kind of thing, but yeah, you want to do it, you want to go, whatever. That's it. I'll just say it. And then I don't say it out loud. I mean, because people probably look at you and go, what?
I think you should next time. Just
balls to the wall. Especially when I've got youngsters around me. It's not kind of the thing that you want to.
Yeah, they're like, Dad, what does that mean? And you're like, just don't worry about it. Just go for it.
Don't worry. My daughter's heard a lot worse.
Just go for it. Just go for it. But do you know what? That kind of stuff is inspiring. And I think you inspire people by doing stuff, you know, not telling them. So, you know, you can tell them. But the point is, the psychology of that is, because I'm interested in psychology and I read a lot about it, is like, if you see someone who's like you do something, you're much more likely to do it as well. Because I was reading a book and it was like, not that I have children, but for example, like if you teach your children to swim, which is, you know, I'm sure you have, but if they see like another kid doing it, they're more likely to do it as well. Because they're like, oh, great. Okay, so there's someone like me, I can see myself in that. And I think that's why, like, you know, everyone should, I don't like the word should, but everyone has more power with their story than they think. And that's why I believe people should share their story more, because it's like, whatever it is, it will inspire someone. And it will inspire someone because you've done it and you've been there and they feel like they can see themselves in you. Whereas when people are, there's too much, in my opinion, too much preaching, like on the internet, of people going, this is what you have to do, this is what you should do. It's like, why should I listen to you? Why should I listen to you? Like, but when you see someone,
That's exactly what this podcast is about, is that someone could listen and go, they're just like me. Oh, that's what they did to move forward or to change this or you know, to help themselves. And that's exactly why I set this up. So
that's great.
I appreciate what you're saying. Thank you. Right. Quick question then was, I just wanted to find out. So you're obviously not doing the big cycling adventures and things. What are you up to? Like what's on the horizon for you?
So I run my own business. I love it so much. And again, thank you for having me on here, James, because it's made me think about the very special trip that I went on and what that means and how that's affected my life. But I think that ultimately I run my own business and it's just me. And I love it that way. And the reason I love it that way is because of one word, and that's freedom. It feels like an adventure that I'm on, just myself. And I feel I can be in control of it. I can go over there, I can go over here. And I feel like that freedom that I had from the bike trip was quite addictive. It's not that I want to be on a bike all the time and I don't want to live within society, because I do. I have different things going on now. But the freedom, that is what I hold on to. The freedom to make the decisions and the choices that I want to make. The freedom to take the business that I have, which is it's a video production business, in the direction that I want to take it in, to speak to the people I want to speak to make things happen that might not have happened. I don't have to ask permission for. Yeah. Like, I just want to kind of frame that, really, rather than being like, I'm here and I live here and I'm doing this. Like, that's, I want to leave you with a feeling of kind of contentment. You know, that's how I feel about it. And I do genuinely think that I learned how to get that feeling from that bike trip, which is, wow, wouldn't it be fantastic when you, isn't it fantastic when you're in control of your destiny? And your adventure. And I can bring other people into the adventure, and I will. But the point is, you know, I just see life as an adventure now. So I'm just gonna end on that, rather than being like, yeah, I'm just kind of, you know, working with people on this. It's interesting, but that's not the point of why I'm here. I'd rather be like, yeah. So the freedom element is really, really important to me.
Well, that's brilliant. Yeah, I think hopefully more people can feel like that and feel that they're the captain of their own boats. I think far too many of us are being steered by other people in life. So yeah, I can 100%. Appreciate.
I don't get involved in this. This is the, people do it this way, people do it this way, you should do it this way. Like, at the end of the day, everyone's, yeah, it's up to everyone else. Like, I love being the captain of my own ship. I'm not saying it's not about, you have to do your own business. Like, you don't have to do that. But like, just feeling like having that autonomy over your time is a wonderful thing. And I want to keep hold of that. 100%.
No, I have not worked for someone for many, many years, and it is about that freedom. Mm-hmm. It's afforded me a lot of time with my daughter and my wife, because we work together. But yeah, so yeah, it is an adventure as well.
Yeah, I think that's the adventure is the word, really, definitely. And I move forward with my life and my partner and, you know, potentially family and stuff, I know that I can be around, and I think that's really important to me. Like, so I'm glad to hear that it's worked for you well and your partner, because that's something that I'm really interested in, that, you know, just being like, okay, well, let's go here, I'm around, let's do that. You know, I want to be, if I become a father, a parent, I want to be around. I don't want it to be like, I want to be like just there and having everything fit around each other, rather than being like, I think that's the thing for me, work and life is not one or the other, and it's not balancing one or the other. It's actually just all blended together, and you can construct the work and business life that you want.
Life has definitely got a little bit, well, the world has got a little bit more closer to that kind of thing for so many more people than it ever was before. And it is something, like you were talking about being an old man on your deathbed. That is one thing I can sit back and go, well, I was glad I was able to do that. I've literally been around for her for virtually her whole life, and it's been great. And if you get into that position, yeah, you'll absolutely love it and you won't regret it.
No, I don't think I will. I appreciate that. Thank you. I think you've heard that a good time, James. I really appreciate that. I think if you're a person who pushes, and I mean pushes that, you know, stretches the comfort zone and knows that they're going to be a person that tries things, I think you're going to be all right. I think you're going to have a great life. I mean, I already have, and I know more's to come, and it might not be the big bike trip to somewhere else, but the micro adventures will come in, and it will be like, great, okay. And so when people say, what have you been up to? I've always got something. Well, that's not why I'm doing it, but I'm doing it for me. But, you know, I like being the person that people think, do you know what? Because people do say to me sometimes, like, do you know what? You've made me want to push myself a bit more. And I don't tell people to push themselves, because it's not the right thing to do, but because everyone pushes themselves in a different way. But I think it's infectious when you enjoy your life and you show it, you know, not, you don't tell them, you just go, I'll just do this. And, you know, and I think it does help people. And I feel like it's become a bit of a mission of mine to be like that, because it's quite self. Well, I say it's selfish. It's self-centered in the way I want to have a great life. But I think that has more of an impact on others than you think, rather than it just being like, well, this is just for me. I think the better life you live, the more fulfilled you are, the more of a positive effect you have on those around you. And so if I have a family, I want people to feel like that, you know, where it's like, you know, life's there to be not just, what I'm trying to say is, I think a parent, and I'm not a parent, but a parent will always want the best for their child. And they'll be like, you know what, you can do whatever you can do what you want, you know, like, you know, I'm not saying that's what you say or anyone else, but people do say it. They're like, you can be whatever you want, fine. If it's coming from someone who has.
Yeah, it's a whole lot more believable.
Is, rather than being like, well, I just stay at home. Yeah. I just stay at home and I always have. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if it doesn't seem to have, well, it doesn't have as much weight, in my opinion, as when you go, for example, like, you know, when your kids might say, well, my dad's done this. Or, you know, it just works better, doesn't it? So practice what you preach, basically.
Yeah. I'm just saying. Well, brilliant. Adam, it has been really enjoyable chatting to you. And I think I'd love to chat more in depth at some stage. But thank you very much for coming on. And remember, folks, you heard it here first, eh? Microadventures.
No, it is. It's a first. Thank you so much for having me, James. I really enjoyed it. It was like talking to an old friend. So that's always nice.
Brilliant. Thank you. I appreciate that. So, I'll put your social so that people can also find out a bit more about your business as well.
Thanks.
I think it's always good to promote people. So thanks very much. That.
Thank you so much, James.
All right, well,
see you later.
We'll leave it in.
Bye.
Cheers. That's a wrap, folks, and a big thank you to our guest. Remember, keep moving forward. The fight's not over until you decide it is. Until next time, stay bold, stay fearless. Live life like it's too short for half measures. This is the Great Guns Podcast, signing off. And remember to subscribe to join our tribe.